This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Ooh.
Wow.
Every time.
Just chills.
Chills, tears, emotions.
Yeah, like getting my prostate checked by an icicle. That's how I hear that song. It's
Thank you, Eli Braden, for that song.
I mean, we could chit-chat you and I, Jenny, as we always are wont to do. But, please, this next guest of ours.
Please do it.
I mean, where do you even begin? I mean, you want to say, like, fucking actor, but also, like, prolific screenwriter, dog lover, a wonderful dancer.
Thanks, wonderful
Danny.
Dancer.
You're welcome.
Looks flawless in shorts.
Flawless, or like we embrace the glitches.
I like that.
There's no glitches.
It's a non-traditional standard of beauty, which
It is the great Thomas Lennon.
Tom Lennon.
Come on, everybody. Here we go.
Tom Lennon.
I feel like we're those sort of like fake friends that it's like so like once we see each other, I'm like, oh my God, I love those guys. You know what I mean? But like then occasionally literally anyone says either of your names and I'm like, I love them so much.
Tom,
let's dive into that name a little bit more. Right. Tom,
no,
tell us more about why you love Danny.
Yes. I just want to also just say, like, I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yes.
As far as you go, like we've met a couple times in the past, but like when you came and did Modern Family that week, it was like, you were just one of those guys. It's like, oh yeah, I guess like online and virtual friendships are also translate to real.
They get a little blurry because I feel like I love you guys.
I
see you and I'm like, oh, I never see them or talk to them. But you exist in an idea to me. And I guess this is sort of,
I feel like I would ask you to help me move.
Absolutely. And by the way, here's what's weird. I would show up for you.
I know you would.
You know, but that's because you've got really great credits and I really love your work. And then there's like friends of mine that I'm like, I actually don't know what you've done and you're not crushing it. So I'm probably not going to help you move. But well, Danny, like oh my God, Danny, I love. Like I see him
well
literally
enough
twice.
That I would help too.
Yeah. Twice a decade, Danny and I hang out for a really intense short period of time.
Exactly.
And it makes an impact on you that will last for a lifetime.
But if somebody like talks shit about you, I'll kill them.
No.
Yeah, of course.
Oh, that's sweet.
By the way, this happens to me like nearly every day. I run into somebody talking shit about you and I have to take them out.
Of course you do. I know who those people are. I know exactly who those guys are. Yeah.
Tell me who it is. I'll have them killed.
Is it not my ex who introduced us? I hope not.
No, of course not. Actually, your ex and I were just do you know I'm working with your ex?
No, but that's fun. This is a fun thing to talk about.
She has nothing but lovely things to say.
And back and the other, and that goes both ways, by the way. She's amazing.
Yeah, no, she's it's lovely. This is not interesting for anybody at home.
Is it not?
Well, maybe it is. It's very.
I feel like when we get into the weeds of my
just off the
sexual conquests.
Okay. Ted, we haven't started recording yet.
No. Right? we'll fix this all in post.
Will you guys give me like a 5-minute warning when we start going? Because I'm not going to talk shit about people. I won't talk about me and my ex and Danny and all that stuff.
Okay, if we'll I just give you like 20 seconds and just get it all out of your system.
We'll count down and...
and go 19.
So this is right after the theme song, and now we're talking like normal adults.
Yeah.
Okay, cut this out, but I'm not a fan of Hitler. I just, right, and I want this out there right now. I do not
The early stuff or the late stuff, Danny? Okay, you're throwing the art in with everything.
Yeah, I just feel like he got too commercial, and that's when I was like, I liked him when he was more independent.
Oh,
it's like what a punk rock band, you know, signs with a big label. It's like, oh,
yeah. I like the stripped down acoustic stuff.
Yeah. Hey Jenny, how are you? It's nice to see you.
I'm good. Yeah. I'm good. Just get off the Hitler stuff off the top.
Yeah, that was that was the people on the podcast do that stuff.
Yeah.
Later on, I'll apologize for you guys later. But if somebody talks shit about you, forget they're dead.
Yeah, they're dead. Hashtag they're dead.
Hashtag they're dead.
I love you guys more than some close friends, and the answer is because you have more followers. I mean, that's like what's not to get.
That's what I look for in a friend, I'll be honest with you.
I feel
if Hitler followed me, I would be like, you know, he's probably, come on, like, it's not that bad.
He might be into your railroad scheduling. We don't know.
I've known Jenny for a long time, but I feel close to you because of you have more
fame and fame and the patriarchy.
Yeah, you have more movie credits, ultimately.
Yeah, the patriarchy and fame, you know, which is a whole thing. You know,
yeah, I want to work backwards. Sometimes we'll work through somebody's like life chronologically and we'll get there. But before we started, hey, we had a little chit chat before it started.
Sure.
You mentioned you're not living in Los Angeles right now.
I mostly don't live in Los Angeles, except for when it's sort of an emergency. Wow. Are you guys both in Los Angeles? Jenny, you're on tour, I feel like.
I'm not right now. I am in West Hollywood.
My son was born there. Oh, I was looking at your future dates or something.
Oh, yeah. Future dates.
But sort of at the beginning of the pandemic, my wife, who is my next girlfriend after Gabby.
Really?
Literally, yeah.
Oh, that's great.
I know, it's weird. But so anyway, at the sort of the beginning of the pandemic, we had kind of like joked about like, should we just like maybe like think about a retirement plan that's like not Los Angeles, where it's, you know, helicopters are falling out of the sky and sometimes it feels like Mordor. And then, you know, on good days, it feels like the Warriors. On bad days, it feels like Mordor.
Yes. You know,
so we were kind of joking around. And then we ended up, we bought a house in Wisconsin, and we ended up being here a lot of the time, if not most of the time.
Wow.
Are you from Wisconsin? Like,
I'm from Chicago.
Okay.
I'm from the outskirts of Chicago. So I'm from about less than 90 minutes from where I was born, basically.
Okay.
Is where we're living now. Yeah.
That's that's amazing. That is sort of a dream of mine. Not Wisconsin, God forbid.
Oh, God forbid.
I was thinking Maui, but Wisconsin.
Sure, sure.
But
sure,
you know,
do like the
Wisconsin is the Maui of the Midwest.
You want to do like the Chris Christopherson thing and be like a cool Howley is the word that they say of like.
I was actually thinking more of a Weird Al Yankovic thing because I know he lives there as well. So I thought,
did you know that? I've never advertised that, but I think he does have a voice.
Oh, Weird Al lives in Wisconsin?
No.
In Hawaii. Yes.
Maybe in one of the Hawaiian islands.
Oh, that would make more sense. Yeah. I was like, if you're drawing all the celebs to Wisconsin, I'm going to be really impressed.
And actually, one of the great things I love about Wisconsin is when Aaron Rodgers isn't in the state, I instantly become like the second or third most famous person.
No, you're, it's
it, it doesn't. It's, the ceiling,
unless J.J. Watt comes back to visit or T.J. Watt. Then.
But I love that you didn't know who that was, and neither do I.
You don't know who
J.J.
that is?
Watt or T.J. Watt? Help me out.
They're from Wisconsin.
And?
Well, one was just named Defensive Player of the Year in the NFL.
Oh, my goodness. You know me in the sports, Jenny. Yeah.
I think Tom
Danny,
less
you just made
sports.
Danny so happy.
I think he may know less than I do, and that's saying something.
Oh, that sports, those sports Wattses. I think you know my deep rooted affinity for all of sports Wattses. when Neil Gaiman moved out of Wisconsin, which I think he did, I moved up like a whole bunch of notches.
It is great coming from a place like I came from. Like I went to Syracuse University. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I was thinking, like, had I gone and where I'm, you know, feted often for my meager,
you're goddamn delight. Yeah.
But yeah, like I, you know, I my picture's up on walls there. But yep. Like I had gone to Harvard.
Oh, who cares? Yeah, it
wouldn't have scratched the surface.
You are, well, Danny, you are a classic big fish in a small pond, and you always have been, and it's wonderful, and we love you for it.
I get upset. I went to college, so I graduated from Sam Houston State University. I should be the most famous person there.
Are you not? How are you not, Jenny?
Because fucking Dan Rather graduated from there.
But give it a couple years.
Yeah. I mean, the communications building is named after him, so.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh.
I got to step up my game.
Talk about an amazing. So I've got jokes for both of you. Talk about who would you rather. And then also, Danny would later. Danny, who came from Syracuse, but would later not love orange men with the former president. So,
oh my God.
This is how you write jokes all day, guys.
Oh,
this
my God.
Guys, for anybody
who's like witnessing genius.
He went from loving the orange men to not loving an orange man. Shit. I should, you know what? Never say it twice because it doesn't land. It doesn't land.
To all of our listeners, you just got a treat because that's how the process works. Yeah.
This is like you were sitting at the Four Seasons in LA at a not very good punch up and I pitched a joke that will not make the film.
Yep.
It will not be in the film.
No, this is, yeah, absolutely. Mm. This is for the punch up for Trolls 7.
Oh. You joke,
Trolls,
but that's very, very
Trolls
close. Troll
7, hashtag me too. And then it's like,
that is very close to my actual life. It's really funny when your life blurs into like your fake life.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, I do.
Yeah. Like,
how so for you?
Oh, it's a lot. Like last year, me and Ben Grant wrote a movie for Arnold Schwarzenegger and his miniature horse and donkey.
Stop it. I'm obsessed with the fact that he has a miniature horse.
Yeah, Whiskey and Lulu. So we're still working on it. But at one point, you know, sometimes like your life drifts into like, am I actually living in Barton Fink? Am I a goof on that? Like, when did the spoof of my life just become my life? And what happened vice versa? But at one point, we're like, oh, we're writing a movie for Arnold Schwarzenegger's miniature horse. And then we jokingly say to each other, what am I, the garbage man around here? Which is, you know, the line from Barton Fink. But
yes, exactly. Yeah. Throw it hard.
Throw it hard. Finger.
Yes. So now that we've taken care of the president, you're such a, you know, a gadfly. Mm-hmm. You've done so much stuff. And I want to know, like, where does it start, Tom? I mean, mm-hmm. I became aware of you, as most people did, on the state. And so, how did that all come to? I'm sure you've recounted this a million times, but like, how did those guys? How did that group, that large, brilliantly funny group of people, come together?
It's a really weird group, in that everybody from my comedy group that met in 1988. The fact that like the vast majority of them are still like quite busy,
you
would weirdly recognize so many of them. Like, there's something very strange about the state, and I can't quite put my finger on it. You know, we met freshman year at NYU, except for Carrie Kenny, who I knew a year before because we went to theater camp together when we were teenagers. The state met. Someone was literally holding auditions for a new comedy group at NYU, and like 9 of the state members were in the original group, and then only 2 or 3 of us joined that next year.
And what a confluence of talent.
It was a weird bunch. And I mean, the fact that we still work together. So, you know, of the state, which was, an NYU comedy club, you know, we did TV shows, The State, and then Viva Variety, and then Stella's offshoot. Yeah. Reno 911 is obviously a major offshoot of it.
Red Hot American Summer is a
couple other, but we're like this really dysfunctional family. You know, we were very, very, very driven. We were all always really, really hard on each other.
Uh-huh.
So if you look at like the weird thing about sketch shows, especially because we did like a super 90s sketch show on MTV.
For sure.
And you could look back and be aghast, you know, at a lot of it. But the very weird thing about the state, because we were so mean to each other and we never let anybody's sketches through that we thought were like iffy.
Right.
So if you look back at the state, it weirdly kind of holds up really well.
Because it went through the process of, if it could get past you.
If it got through us who all were the cruelest and worst audience. I realized later in life, like pitching movies, like the state was the best practice because you're in a room with like 10 other people who are furious with you and hate your material and don't want to do it and would rather do some of their own material.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, that's what the movie system is like. You just like people are in a room and they hate you, but yeah. You have to win them over with your material. And it was very, very good practice.
You know, it's funny you say that. I talk about this a lot and I think about it, but it's like, I find this with like funny people sometimes when they reach that mega stardom area and then everything that they say is laughed at by friends.
Yeah. Super dangerous.
I was my first writing job was on the Arsenio Hall show years ago. I'm old. And we went out one time with Eddie Murphy and his entourage. And we got at a place, this place called the Bar One, and we're just like sitting at a table and they come up to the table, like, what can I get you? And Eddie Murphy looks at the menu and goes, you know what, I think I'll have some, let's get the calamari. And four guys around Eddie just start going, calamari! And I was like,
it was just what he ordered, guys.
How do you get, I mean, that's how you probably lose a little bit of your edge if you're like,
right.
I do think it's important to, and maybe it's why I've been part of this like sort of strange collective since the 80s, but don't always surround yourself with people that think your stuff is great. You know, like it's pretty significant to like have bad cops around you or people at least that are sort of like keeping you honest.
But I always think about like growing up, my parents never like gave us a courtesy laugh.
Good.
Like just because we're kids and you were like, hey, I got a joke, knock knock. Nope. And then they're like, yeah, swing and a miss, try again, you know, like perfect. That was if you actually did make them laugh, you felt like a superhero because you knew that was an earned laugh.
It's kind of an important thing, but I will say, man, the state we would, but it also like it was a very good practice of like thicken up your skin a little bit. So we would pitch every day, every single day, we'd pitch sketches to each other and you had to act out the whole thing. And you're like, you're doing your sketch. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if people didn't like it, it really, really, really hurt, you know, and it sucks. And then you go pout for a while. But it was very good practice to be like, yeah, every once in a while, your thing sucks.
Did you ever leave that room? Yeah. I've been in rooms like this that were very like intense and with people I respected too, but intense where I would often leave the room and think like, fuck all these people. I don't know.
100%. I feel like I quit the state probably like 3 or 4 or 5 times. At least announced that I was quitting and like threw my sketch against the wall or something. And I think that actually many of us did. I don't know. I might've quit more than anyone else.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, there was a lot of just like,
did you throw things around a lot?
Of course. Really... Oh, my God. Yeah. Chairs were thrown. I think Ken Marino put his fist through a wall one time.
I can see that.
Through drywall when we were having a big fight about something. Again, the sketches are good. Yeah. Oh, no. Sorry. Yeah.
No, that's good. No, I was curious because like when you meet today, can you kind of, because, you know, age, like all of the, you know, the things that were so important to me in my 20s and like life or death, this joke or that. And then like, you know, you're lucky enough to have a career, knock wood. And then you look back and like, I will frequently have like the lightest, jokiest, warmest conversation about that thing now that was so important. And it's hysterical.
Well, yeah. For most of the state, I would say in many ways, we're closer in our early 50s than we ever were in our 20s. Like like the bonds are much deeper now.
Of course,
but we'll still fight about it. We'll still fight about stuff.
Okay, so who do you hate? Who do you hate the most?
Thank you. Jenny this is what Jenny does best.
Oh, you're the best.
Come on, who do you hate?
You're the best. No,
go.
We're not doing.
And then who do you second
that.
Hate? Third.
We're not doing that. We're not doing that. And it's also good. You could probably figure it out very fast.
Oh yeah, no, we.
I mean, it's just such an.
No, it's obviously.
I am not intuitive at all.
I've got it. It rhymes with Michael Howalt.
Oh my God, I love that guy. Well, that's so weird. He's got like so many movies out. I know, he's a delight.
He's great, man. Yeah. What a career he's had too.
I know, right?
Amazing.
So can we talk about, because I'm saying this without making a joke here, obsessed with Reno 911. Mm-hmm. I have loved Reno 911 since day one.
She has. She actually got me really like going back and looking at even all of them again. And in the movie, like you love it.
I was like, great. Just love it. So I'm super happy that you have now a new series that's out.
There's a whole new season that's coming out. Yeah, we actually just did a movie for Paramount Plus called Reno 911, The Hunt for QAnon.
I was actually talking to Wendy about it. She
really?
I think I'm doing a little project. Yeah, she loves it.
She's amazing, that movie. She has a saxophone solo. It's really insane.
I'm excited. I love it.
She really, really shines in that movie in particular. And then also, so our eighth season is coming out on Roku quite soon.
That's and awesome.
It's been really amazing. Like to like play a character. So we shot the pilot for that in the year 2000.
Uh huh.
So it's very interesting to like
22 years later.
Yeah, like basically. Play and the first 3 years nothing happened, and then it got picked up in 2003. But it's just weird to like at a certain point you're playing something that like is more of your persona than your actual persona.
Yes.
Is that something that, does that make sense?
Yeah. It really makes sense, and I think particularly for you and Daniel knowing you.
Oh, for sure. And not only that, but like now I'm doing like for the last couple of seasons and the new movie, it's like there is a Halloween costume of my character.
Yeah.
So at a certain point, it's like, am I still being the character?
Yeah.
Or am I like also a guy who's watched Reno 911 a lot, like doing that guy? Like, yeah. What am I doing? You know, it's like, it's just a strange thing to play something that long. Yeah.
But it's something like that character is, I mean, it's just, I would say it's fully such an iconic character. I mean,
really?
You could just say like Dangle and that's, you immediately know, you don't have to say Lieutenant or, now, is that something like, because I feel like Reno 911 actually launched a lot of people's careers. Like, I feel like there were people that came on. I know that, like, Nick Swartzen, for example, was someone who had been, you know, a stand-up comedian. Him and I are buddies and everything. But when he plays Terry, the roller skating prostitute.
Of all time.
I mean, I've gone and, like, you know, toured with Nick before. And I mean, all it takes is for him to go, Terry, and, like, the whole place will lose their shit.
A hand job's still a job. So yeah. there's almost no people on Reno 911. We usually have a little bit of a plan with almost everybody.
Yeah.
Very seldom do we just have somebody come in where we're like, please don't tell us, and we're going to pull up in the car and just start talking when we get out.
Yeah.
But obviously Swartzen is one of those.
That's amazing. So those scenes, was that really, that's amazing to me because they actually, this is a credit to you and to him, but a lot of shows that are improvised, I find that the show, they don't have the class, they lack a beginning, middle and end. Like it's funny, but they lack, and you always had that.
We often write endings.
Okay.
To be fair. Structure. I think the one thing that we've learned from like 8 seasons and 2 movies now is it's great to improvise and totally fun.
Yeah.
The only thing better is when you have structured it somewhat. So at least, you know, boy, it would be really great if you know how it's ending. And of course there's an easy, weird assist that we have on Reno 911, which is super easy. I mean, I've watched many, many shows where people are like, this is Reno 911 in a blank.
Right.
And
yes,
it's, you know, it's in a grocery store or it's in a thing or it's like And they're like, well, the funny thing is we have a bunch of funny people and they improvise. And that is absolutely about 25% of Reno 911 is a bunch of funny people that are improvising.
Get that.
And what you don't always see is the tons of structure and the tons of thought that went into like every other thing other than the funny stuff people are saying.
No, the character.
Like Swartzen scene. Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. No, but your characters, the way they're going to react to a situation and the way they're, because like comedy and drama, it's all about, it's not about plot. It's about characters interacting and what they want and how you get forward there. And everything is very, it's all consistent. Like the physics of that show, as wild as it gets, is all consistent.
We're very lucky because we also always know, you know, in improv, there's always, like games are always either like status or, you know, this or what's that. And the answer is we're always, always in conflict.
Yes.
Yeah.
So every scene starts in conflict.
Yeah.
Which is in a weird way, like super satisfying. We almost never have scenes that start with like, hey, how's it going? You know, like nothing's ever really upbeat unless it's like a weird romantic moment.
Yeah. Yeah. So but we that's have, conflict.
Yeah. Which is in its own way a form of conflict. Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, that's a very good point. So yeah, we mix up either like unrequited love, which is like the in between, all the in between scenes are unrequited love.
Right.
I mean, like if you were to chart it out as an algorithm and be like unrequited love,
yeah,
conflict with Terry, unrequited yeah. love, conflict with this weirdo, unrequited love. And it's like, yeah.
If I make you, I'm going to blow more smoke, but what that conflict with Terry, as funny as it was, it generally impacted the unrequited love story that would follow it.
That was next. Yeah.
Yeah.
Or would be informed by the unrequited love story that preceded it, you know?
And this is so funny, just as a, you know, as a, for writers out there.
Yeah.
The reason that we started doing Reno 911 is because we'd been shut down from Fox from doing a regular sketch show. And what the president of Fox at the time said to us, other than that we were too old to be on Fox at 29, she said, like, you're forgetting a sketch show in many ways forgets why people want to watch television shows, which is you want to see people that you love and characters that you love or think are weird or engage you in some way. And you want to see how they will react to things.
Right.
And I was like, God, that's so stupid. Is that why people like TV? Oh, shit. I was like, why did that never occur to me until now? Like, I literally never thought about that. Oh, shit. I've just been doing sketches. And the answer is the people in all the sketches should be someone that you're excited about the way that they interact with the world. That not that you can predict it, but that you're in a way excited to see it, you know, like
if I walk into an apartment that's messy, that's where I start a scene. That's something. But if I know that the character I have has OCD and now I have a messy apartment, now I can anticipate stress and reaction to it. Right. You know, that's like, that's the by the numbers version. But.
And that was the kind of fun thing about that we had cast a bunch of people to be in a sketch show that was written, and then that got thrown away completely. And then we started doing, you know, a structured sketch show. So everybody's character is just like basically their own persona with a slightly weird nudge. So like Dangle's just the slightly more, you know, the definitely more musical theatery version of, like, there's a lot, the overlap is crazy. So like,
the shorts,
there's definitely like stuff going on that's like, oh no, Tom definitely likes having his clothes off and being this guy. And like,
I was on set with you, I remember.
Yeah, you know me, and I'm excited about
it. It was a clause in his contract.
Yeah, we talk about Bob Fosse a lot and stuff. And so, like,
a lot of jazz hands,
much jazz hands. But there's like, so we accidentally like got this group of people, and because of like the time crunch and we didn't think about it, everybody's just like, you know, like, you got a bunch of people that are being very, very close to a version of themselves.
Yeah.
But they've turned up the sort of like archetype of what they were. You know, it's almost like everybody in the cast just like, you got blasted with radiation. Yeah. Be the version of you that got blasted with radiation so that when we cut to you, it's automatically a joke.
Yes.
Like, it's automatically funny because we know you now. You're so what you are. That, like, you looking at this other person will be funny, you know?
Yeah. I do. And, you know, here's what's not funny, Tom. It's the, look, it's capitalism. And, but it's a necessary part of our lives. Mm. And I think that's a great, by the way, one of the things I like to do is come up with the most awkward segue to a commercial.
Are we going into commercial?
Yeah. And I felt like, I
love it. Who are you?
Honestly, I'm sitting here trying to improv.
Do you guys read the commercials yourself, like some famous people do?
Yes,
we do.
We're super down to earth. We read our own.
I'm not saying you're down to earth. I'm saying you're very big stars.
But we're down to earth.
Copy yourself. Do you make it seem like you really mean it, or do you? Let's find out.
It depends how crunched for time we are. But I will say this.
I feel like
all of our I don't care who the sponsors are, whether
I
they're
do.
Selling
I do.
Online way, gambling sites or boner pills.
Bet online.
Wait. Yeah, bet online. Oh, I can't. You know what?
Did you guys tailor this episode for me? Because boner pills and online gaming are like my
No, online gambling. On it. It's for sports. Look,
I All wish right. we could have made the offer code today.
Okay, here we go.
Hey, Dude It Nation. This is Danny Zucker coming at you solo for this ad because, you know, if you know anything about me, I'm a big sports guy and Jenny isn't that into sports. And what's funny about that is it's the opposite. But here's the thing. I'm not into sports, but I have found that when you add a little wagering to these contests, suddenly I'm in. Had some fun bets on the old Super Bowl. You know, the Super Bowl match and with Bet Online, our sponsor. And I can swear to what a great experience that was. Anyway, Bet Online remains your number one source for all your sports betting this season. Everything from pro and college basketball, UFC, MMA, NHL, and more initials of sports, I presume. You'll always find the latest odds, team matchup info, player news, and game friends at Bet Online. And honestly, are there any better friends than game friends? Not that I found. With live betting options, free contests, and live scores for almost any sport or game imaginable. Just try and imagine it. Bet Online is truly the fastest and easiest way to bet all your favorite leagues and events. So, Doing It Nation, do this for me and for Jenny in absentia. Head on over to this website today or use your mobile device to join and receive your 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit. Make sure to use promo code CLNS50 to receive your rewards. That's CLNS50 to get them rewards. BetOnline.ag, where the game starts.
All right, so we're now welcome back to the podcast. We just
we're back. We're Tom Lennon. Mm-hmm. Hey Tom,
and by the way, we need a new Danny. Sponsor for next week because I think we just got dropped from.
Please from bring Bet back Online? Order bills.
We just keep. Wait, how do we get dropped from them?
They just knew. They sensed it, right?
They just knew. They sensed anything. It. They heard. They heard bum and cock hey. Fights, and they.
Yeah, they're on a show called Doing It. They know.
Yeah, they knew what they were getting into. They're fine. They're be good.
Oh, how guys. Did the movie fuck? How did this movie like Todd like go to screenwriter career start that I'm so jealous of?
You were jealous of me?
That's a hilarious thing. I know I'm very jealous of you because those. By the way, the Night at the Museum movies.
I mean, come on,
those are really fun. But the answer to that is that most of them come out of some terrible failure that. And then you just keep going. But so like Ben Garant, who does Reno with me, we've written a whole bunch of movies that gotten made. Yeah. And, but you have to go back. So like the reason we write movies is because we wrote a bunch of sketches together on a bunch of different sketch shows. And then somebody said, can you adapt this movie? And we did. And that movie was called Let's Go to Prison, which Bob Odenkirk directed.
I remember this movie. Yeah. Yes.
And it was actually kind of a cool movie. And then it was like people started to seem to like it in the test screenings and stuff. And then it came out and it was an absolutely epic disaster. Everybody hated it and hated us. And then that's how it goes. So like you do something, everyone hates you and hates it. And then you get back up and see if you can get back,
get back on the song.
Yeah. You just keep, Tub Thumper. It's that song's called Danny Tub Thumper. Tub Thumper.
Look, I just had a whiskey.
Use the code, guys. You go to Bet Online. Use the code Tub Thumper.
It's Tud Thumping. Tub Thumping.
Son of a bitch. It is Tub Thumping.
Yeah, so if you're going to correct me, I just want to make
correct. Be correct.
If you're going to try to knock Danny down, you better learn to get back up again.
I need a whiskey drink and I need a cider drink right now.
Cider drink. So let's go all Chumbawamba for the. Do you know that Chumbawamba was like actually like socialist and was like a cool organization? So like the roadies made the same as like the singer.
I know.
Yeah.
She urged everybody to steal the album.
Well, that's dumb.
Really?
Yeah, it was just
speaking of, enter the code Tub Thumping and get a copy of Chumbawamba's record at
actually Trouble Wumbo will personally bring you the album.
They will bring it. It's like DoorDash.
Yeah.
You go to Bet Online, you enter Chumbawamba, you get someone will come thumping on your tub in a moment. So anyway, it's cute because Danny, I'm also jealous of your career all the time. I'm like, how the fuck does he do that?
Yeah.
Like, he's always writing everything. So we wrote sketches and then we wrote that movie. It was, everybody hated it. But it was a really cool experience. I thought it was actually kind of like mostly really great movie. Bob Odenkirk directed it.
Yeah.
And it was really, had like really a lot of great things about it. We adapted a movie, a Luc Besson movie.
Really?
That ended up being called Taxi with Queen Latifah and Jimmy Fallon.
I remember and the ads for that. Yes. It
was widely despised again. it was interesting because the test screenings of Taxi were so great that we had signed contracts to write Taxi 2 for Fox.
Oh.
And because they were so excited about Taxi as a franchise.
Wow.
And so, of course, the Monday morning after Taxi came out and everyone hated it and hated us, you know, we got summoned into Fox sort of the middle of that week. And they said, you have to pick, since we're never making Taxi 2, but you already have a contract for a film here now, mm-hmm. pick one of these like three or four children's books to adapt. And one of the three or four books they put on the table, one of them was a very short picture book called Night at the Museum. And we're like, oh, we could definitely figure out what a movie of this would be. This seems really like a fun thing. And so, you know, like the answer is, for the most part, most of the writing of the hits came from two or three terrible things happening right before it.
I
that
noticed.
You don't remember the like stuff that sucked that everyone right. hated. You're just like, oh, Tom, oh my God, Tom and Ben wrote Night at the Museum. I'm like, absolutely. And that was like the fourth thing we wrote after everyone hated us and we were basically dead to everyone and each other.
I have a question for you because it's more like something I'd ask you like over a drink and dealing with mm-hmm. my own sort of insecurity over this. But
of course,
my whole career has been exactly the same. I'd have something canceled and then
always,
and then thank God it was canceled. Otherwise this other better opportunity would not have happened or things like that.
Every single time.
Now, since we know that that's every single time, when you find yourself, mm-hmm. and I don't know how long it's been, but when you find yourself in a dark,
can I see that light at the end of the tunnel that
or
I
do you think it's finally
coming?
Over?
I always think it's over.
Okay, good.
I never see that there's a good thing coming. Never, ever, ever. I still don't. I never will.
Okay, good. Okay, well, that's why I feel like you're my friend.
That's why you're perfect
on this podcast. I'm done with, I had a good weekend of shows, and then I'm and that's it. I'll never be booked again.
No, so you'll never be booked again. And also, you'll never catch that high again. And also, that was it. You peaked. And now it's like, wow, I've really cooled off since that show that was almost a day and a half ago. And like, I feel like no one's like, that's kind of why there was a brief little window where I did stand up for a little bit.
Uh-huh.
And it is such a dangerous game.
Yeah.
I mean, the highs are so high and then the lows are so instantaneously so low.
Did you find that? When did you do it again?
Oh, brief. My entire stand-up career was like 1 year, maybe 2 years.
How long into your career was this?
Oh, no. It was way, way later than you would expect.
So,
like,
so
it was, yeah, in my like probably mid-30s or something.
See, you know? I recently, Jenny knows this because I had a stellar opening for her in Washington. She killed and I did fine. It was like I basically had at the time 6 minutes of material and she said, oh, you need to do 20. It's like, okay, I'll just figure that out on the
crowd
plane.
Work. Yeah, you did some crowd work and you did talk about the venue.
But what I have found, because I started in earnest right around the pandemic time and until now, to do it like, you know, I go up once or twice a week.
Feels really good, doesn't it?
Good. But there's no stakes anymore. Like, I feel like I already proved myself. Like, I started as a stand-up in my 20s.
Well, good point. Yeah.
And so it's like, when I bomb, I still come home and I just go to sleep with my Emmy Awards. And it's like, they don't know.
I never do that.
Yeah. They're sharp. They poke you.
I'm really looking for like the things to feel bad about. Well, maybe it's just sort of an Irishy thing. I don't know, but I'm always.
I don't know. It should be. Yeah, maybe.
I
don't
feel like I was writing and like, so you know, like I've sold a lot of pilots that have gone nowhere, but you know, they pay for them. Yeah. So you're like, hey, okay, I'm doing it. But I needed some like immediate, you know, gratification. Like maybe I'll tell the jokes that I write on stage so that I can at least feel like
it is like
being productive and getting like an immediate sense of like, oh, that worked, that didn't, or oh, here's that applause. You feel good about yourself. And then
it really, really is a necessary thing sometimes. But it also, you know, it becomes like a high where you sort of like chase it sometimes.
Yeah, you're chasing the dragon after a period of time. And it's.
Yeah, but it's like, but you're totally right, which is like, what if I just was able to go out in front of like a couple hundred people and like say everything I thought, like, and not have it filtered and not have people be like, hey, you know what? Like, what if you like, just for fun, like you should really like pause for a second and then be like, what? Like, you know, like there's no one has like, you haven't been micromanaged in any way. Right. Which
it is, it's singular. It's singular.
Really, yes.
You're figuring it out by yourself. Yeah.
I've also learned to sort of like embrace bombing when it happens in a way that I hadn't in when I was younger. And in that, like, I learned so much in those moments when, because I can.
You can wait them out for sure. You can. Yeah. I mean, look at you. You're You do have a fair amount of Emmys and stuff, and you're like
when you've already been successful at one thing. I think it bombing makes it easier to just kind of laugh. You can laugh it off. I mean, like,
I also learn. It's like there are things because I was always so for 30 years in a writer's room. Like, I know this joke is funny. They just didn't do it right. They're going to do it. And it's like, I know this is funny. And then, like, you go up on stage. And I was like, I really learned this in Washington a couple of times. I was like, I know this joke is funny. And I tried it three out of the four times. It didn't work. And then I had to go back and think, have I been wrong about things I thought were funny that I made other people say?
That's one of my favorite things of, like, it's so interesting when I see people that are like, you know, and I've never been in this world, and I think you guys exist very strongly in the world of like, you guys have been done funny stuff for a very, very, very long time.
Yeah.
And then I'll watch stuff that's like dramas or like heartfelt or like people like acting really hard at each other. And I'm like, my main thing is like, how the fuck did these people know that they were done?
I agree.
Like, how did they like write the script and they're like, Dad, well, Dad's not here. And then they're like, perfect, I'm gonna go to lunch, I just figured it out, because one guy will look at the other guy and he'll say, well, guess what, Dad's not here, and then he'll look at you and he says, but when I see your face, Dad is here. And I'm like, how did you guys know that you were done? Like,
that's
that would
the
be
blow.
The saddest thing you could write, because I'm like, the great thing about being in comedy is you know for a fucking fact if it worked or not. Because people are instantly like, oh my God, that was super funny.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know.
But sad stuff, how do these people know that they're good at it?
It's like everyone's behind the camera in tears or something.
How do people know they're good at drama other than that they're overconfident and cocky?
You're exactly right.
I don't know. I don't know how they think they're good at it.
I think it's like if they can make people cry, they believe they're good at it. And that's not really.
How do they know? But they don't know that till later.
Yeah, they're like, hey, you see this stand-up dad that we've just cast? Right. Well, we're killing him off. And then everyone cries.
But both of you can like go to a venue, and I think you are probably soon, and test out how funny you are.
Yeah.
And you will get instantaneous feedback as to whether you're right or wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's no stand-up melodrama clubs.
There's no club that you can go to where it's like, well, I guess it's the legitimate theater.
Yeah. I guess so. That's true.
Yeah. Analog.
Where you can get up and be like, oh, from use of fire. But I, who was not fit for sport of tricks to caper in a lady's bedchamber, they'd be like, you made us so sad.
Before we get to our end segment, all right. I want to ask, what are you up to now? What are you anything you're working on and you're excited about or plugging or can talk about?
I got. I have three novels out.
Do you really?
I do. It's so cute that I live in a world where you don't even know. Like you're Danny, I consider you one of my best friends.
I know.
I
didn't know you. Here's the thing. I knew you wrote a novel. I didn't know you had three.
There's the three. So I have three novels. It's a sort of a young adult fantasy. It's a funny, very funny fantasy, very silly fantasy series called Ronan Boyle, and there's three of them.
That's amazing.
And then right now, so I'm writing the the animated feature for DreamWorks of the first one.
How exciting. Are you doing it with Ben, or are you doing it alone?
No, the novels are just me, and the movie's just me. But then, you know, I'm always doing some other, you know, things here and there, and, you know.
Yeah.
Like, it once you know, like, once you do kind of what we do, like, nothing ever feels like, it's interesting, like, what would I be excited about if I heard, I always run it through the filter of, like, oh, if I heard that someone else from the state was doing this, would I be excited about it?
Or
would I be jealous and mad? Yeah, exactly. You know, and I'm always like, oh, and one time, sometimes I have to remind myself, like, just like try to step back and imagine, like, what, how you would congratulate someone else.
Yeah.
If you heard they were doing this, like, how would you congratulate, like, a genuine friend if they were doing one of the, like, four things you're doing? But it's very easy to forget that when you're doing it.
For sure.
It's very easy to just remember, like, oh, fuck, everybody's giving me notes all the time and everything sucks. And
yeah,
fucking, I'm like,
fraud. I hate this.
All of the above. I have imposter syndrome. I hate this. But also, like, just my script was so perfect and I should just fucking throw it against the wall. And then you're, you know, you're back where we started.
No, I'll just say this, Tom. You're like one of those people. Even before, like, even if I didn't know you, you elevate everything you're in and you're associated with. Honestly, it's like, you're just like, whenever your name as a performer has come up in any writer's room I've ever been in, is like to do a spot or to do this, it's like, yes, like that would be like, no one's ever, you know, and there's very few, trust me, I'm on the other side of the table a lot of the time. There's very few people who we feel that way.
Well, I hope I would say that. I think that's a very easy thing that I see in some folks, which is like, and I think here's what I would say about the secret to why most of my comedy group, the state, is still very active, is like, if you could honestly, genuinely commit to everything you're doing.
Yes.
And like, there's no part of you that has any like toe out of what you're doing, but like, I go really hard at literally anything. Like, I don't know why. I'm just from like, and I think like coming from a group that was confrontational and, you know, adversarial, and we always, you know, we were like competing to be like, who will be the busboy with a unibrow that has no lines?
Like, I understand.
And we're like, I will commit to this so fucking hard. And I think all of us took that into the rest of our lives, which is like, you know.
You hear all these stories about, like, I mean, I think people who are really good at what they do, and I'm not like, I don't want to vaunt us in that level, but you always heard about like Kobe Bryant after like a game would like sometimes hang out afterwards and shoot three pointers, like just practice afterwards. Yeah. It's like, you're the top of your, like, and I think like you take all of those things really seriously. It shows. So.
But that's like, that's the fun of it. I mean, it's like,
of course it is.
Yeah.
Like, I've always, on a couple occasions, I've been on sets with actors who've, and this might be a controversial thing to say, and, but I'm going to say, I've never in now like about 30 some years of acting and stuff like that, I've never asked a question of a writer or a director ever. Like, I've never asked, no, because my assumption is if I see it on a script, I know what the writer meant.
That's amazing. Well, because you're
right. I also expect other people, if they look at my script of something I wrote,
to know that,
you know what I meant. It's there. There's no, it's not abstract. So like, everything people are always like, hey, we want to hear your thoughts on this new draft of a thing that you wrote. And I'm like, fuck you. The draft is my thoughts.
Exactly.
And I gotta say, like, like, I've met actors and I've acted, you know, since basically I was a kid, but it's your job to look at the thing and then make it amazing. It's not your job to go like, hey, would this be, but what if I could, I, hey Danny, real quickly, wouldn't I say this backwards? And it's like, as soon as you do that, the answer is fuck you. No, like, you're not really an actor. If you have to come in and be like, hey, tell me how this is, or why would I say this?
Right.
That's not, that's, you're not, this is not a job for you, I don't think.
Yeah.
Wow. That must be challenging sometimes when you write for somebody who doesn't take it as seriously as you might take
it's not like seriously. It's just like
professionally.
The thing is like the work you should, I'm just always baffled by actors who ask tons of questions.
Yeah.
I think I've
been in that situation. It's like, not that everything I write is going to be perfect. And sometimes it's like, oh my God, I hear them say it. It's like, I couldn't say that line I just wrote. Of course, I'll change that. Right. But then there's the other ones where they're asking a lot of questions where I've actually had the conversation with an actor. This is not a Modern Family.
Of course.
Happened where I go, okay, so you don't like this. Like what? Let me just do a different line for you here. Cause if that, like, tell me what you don't like, because it's like, I can tell that the questions are just a way of not doing that particular.
Well, 100%. It's like a weird dodge of like, I'm not going to land that, or it's not. Yeah.
Yeah.
Or I don't like it.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's okay.
Which is fine. If it's a protest,
I think that's okay.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. But if it's a protest, I respect it. But generally, like, I do think it's like sometimes with, like in my career, it's like who will come in and like literally you could set them on fire and they'll do what we meant, or they'll at least try it so fucking hard that if it fails, it failed of its own accord.
No, I completely see that. I mean, and so many of you guys on the state had that. I mean, I do think about Ken Marino a lot because
oh my God, yeah.
His level of commitment to a character, no matter what the character is just, it's spectacular.
So Ken and I are actually writing something right now as we speak, and we get closer and closer as we get older. But at one point we were in our 20s and we were in the Greek islands. And I wiped out a Vespa and I thought I was going to like maybe die. And like Ken Marino threw me over his shoulder and he ran me to a hospital. I've been to the hospital 3 times in my life and twice Ken Marino carried me there. So, you know, it's, you know, like he has a big place in my heart, yeah. But, at one point, so I'd wiped out this Vespa and I'd lost all my friends in the Greek islands and they were gone and they were days away and I couldn't find them. We didn't really have cell phones. It was like payphones and stuff. And then like 6 or 8 days later, I found my friends on Mykonos through like just a weird chain of like human contact. And then I walked up next to Ken Marino, who was using an ATM, and he hadn't seen me, and he thought I was either gone or maybe he had been very sick in the hospital. And he looked over at me and went, "Hey, what's up?" And it was it was the funniest thing I'd ever seen a human being do.
That
like,
makes
he didn't
laugh.
Like jump for joy and like hug me. He was just like, "Oh, what's up?"
Yeah.
And I was like, "Oh, this is a person who can commit to bits that might take an entire life."
Yeah, it's the long con.
The long con. I'm way more into the long con.
Well, we're at the point in the show, Tom, where we just like, we give a shout out to things we're watching or like that you have. You have anything that's been tickling your fancy on the tubes?
Yeah, I've been loving The World According to Jeff Goldblum.
Oh, I haven't seen it yet.
I think it's really wonderful.
It's on Disney Plus, right?
It's great. It's like a comfort food kind of show. It's just like my son, who's 12, loves it, and then we can watch it together. They just introduce Jeff Goldblum to some idea every week, and he goes, "Oh my goodness, this is marvelous! What? Oh wow!"
I really want to see a half hour of that.
It's so underthought.
I will start it tonight, Tom.
Throw up any Jeff Goldblum, the World According to Jeff Goldblum.
Exciting.
They're always super upbeat. They have a great message at the end, but it's mostly him just going, "Oh, look at this. This is wow. Oh, marvelous." He just loves shit. And it's fun to see people just loving shit. It's a little bit like the old Huell Hauser show.
Yes. You know? Yeah.
It's a little like California's Gold. Yeah.
Wow, that's a good recommendation.
I'm definitely going to check. And that's on Disney Plus.
It is. Right? It's either on it's on some version of that streamer, which could be, no, it's on Disney Plus. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm watching that.
Yeah.
Well, Danny, per your recommendation, I started Pam and Tommy and I'm obsessed with the fact that there's a talking cock in it.
Yeah.
I've heard of this.
Yeah.
Jason Mantzoukas
in the role of a lifetime.
One of the greatest actors voices alive or dead.
Tommy Lee's Ding Dong.
Mm-hmm. Basically plays Tommy Lee's penis.
Tommy Lee's
now we got to talk about this for a second.
Flawless.
So when I had like a long kissing scene with Pamela Anderson on the show Stacked.
Which
I'm well aware, sir.
I forgot that, Danny. That's
you were, I did Stacked, but I think you were there the very first mini season of it.
I was there. It was like it was right when it was like the second to last episode.
Oh, you were there when I was there. We were there.
Yeah, of course. That's right. You've lived long enough. You just forgot this.
Wow. I blocked Stacked out of my mind on so many levels.
By the way, it's actually kind of a solid sitcom.
It is. And coming back, I run into people who like it a lot.
So did I. And I had like a weirdly long kissing scene with Pamela Anderson on Stacked. Right. And
she
then
works
but
in
of
a
course,
library, right? And it's called Stacked.
No, in a bookstore.
Of course, bookstore. But of course, like the weird thing that when you have a long kissing scene with Pamela Anderson, the only thing that runs through your mind is the sex tape. And you're like, well, this is like, you know, you're split. You're a split mind at that time.
Yeah.
Of course.
You're like, this is all so neat. And then like, oh, that was it's really amazing, weird sex tape that happened.
Yeah. Well, that's a cool anecdote for the party for your high school.
Well, the weird thing that I remember. So then like about earlier this year, I was on a flight with Pamela Anderson. And I was like, hey, it's Tom from Stacked. And I thought she would remember making out with me more.
Yeah. It wasn't as meaningful to her.
She did.
Oh.
Because it seemed like she was
meeting
me
say,
for
like,
the
Sarah,
first time.
I'm Nicole Eggert. It's not Pam.
Great. Five stars.
Five stars.
That's from
I'll just give a recommendation.
Jenny from way downtown. That was really awesome. Sir.
That was amazing.
I'm Nicole Eggert.
That's why I'm friends with Jenny right there.
I ruin a party, don't I?
That's you just got Johnson.
Sure.
All right, Danny, you hit us with your recommendation.
I have a big one that I loved. It made me cry all the way through, like mm-hmm. Like I was on a like a hormonal was a Station 11.
Oh, really?
Station 11.
Jenny was skeptical, and so was I. So that's curious.
Yeah. Station 11 is beautiful. I think so too. Did you watch it?
I did. I
the ending is a problem.
I haven't seen the ending. I only have one weird note.
Tell me.
No, and I like the show a lot. I think there's a lot of really, really, really cool things about the show. Occasionally, when I see people doing Shakespeare in something else.
Yes.
And then right after it, they all tell each other how amazing it was. I'm always a little like, wow, that was a heavy swing for you to say, like, that was the best Hamlet I've ever seen. And I'm like, that was crazy because I just saw that scene and you all told each other how amazing your Hamlets were.
You're not
that's
wrong
a big,
about
it's
that.
It's a big swing. It's a very, very, very bold thing to do, to be like, we're doing Shakespeare plays and they're the best ones anyone's ever seen.
Well, to be fair, it was from the after the apocalypse, so they didn't have, so it was probably the only one they had seen. But
okay.
Still.
Okay.
But
I'm with you. Do you understand? Like, I think
it's like stand-up comedy in a film, and then we hear
a million percent.
Yeah. So yeah. I get
And they've tried it a million times where they're like, I just came off from doing the greatest stand-up comical thing that ever happened.
And we watched it.
And you're like, well, that's weird because it doesn't really translate. You can't. It's one of those things that just doesn't really translate.
I agree with this. And it's funny. It's like I wasn't tuned into that particular peeve. When you mention it, I totally see it. I think I was obsessed, but you're absolutely right.
When David Cross came in, it was like, I just loved it so much. But I love the show. Everyone in it's amazing. If they pulled the plays out, I would like it more.
Well, I felt like the post-apocalyptic part was the least interesting part of the show. It was sort of those relationships,
right.
As it was all going down. Also weird that was written 4 years before
No, well, that part was eerie.
It was it was so eerie. But yeah. that's what I've been watching. But look, we'll give it a whirl. Anyway,
give it a whirl. All right.
We are blessed to consider you a sort of friend. No, yeah. Fuck that. A real friend. I think
a real friend.
If people talk shit about you, I will actually kill them.
You know so, what? If they talk shit about you, I will kill them as well.
Again, this is a longer conversation than I've had with any close friends of mine in a long, long time.
I actually think for me too.
I definitely know it is for me. Without a doubt. Like, and there's definitely like Danny, like I should talk to Gabby and like sort out like, you know, like, but
for those who don't know, so Gabby Allen is a co-creator. We've worked together. When I first met Tom on a show called Jesse,
yes.
And she's one of the co-creators of a show called Housebroken on Fox that I'm working on right now.
Yeah.
And Tom and she were dating when I first worked with her.
Right. Yeah. But like. Unless does Gabby have a podcast? Because I should go on that right now.
No, she doesn't. She doesn't.
Well, that's why I haven't talked to her in a little bit.
Yeah. Well, why would you? Yeah. I mean, they're
tell her to get a podcast. Yeah,
I have a huge place in my heart for her, but she's got to get a podcast so I can check in and see how she
bullshit is. Bullshit.
Get a podcast. She also would be great at it. She'd be great at it.
She's the best. She's one of the. She's truly one of the best people.
We agree to agree.
Yeah. But it's really been it's been such a pleasure, Tom.
Yeah, I appreciate it.
And I hope I get to. See you in the not too distant future.
I know.
And I'll come to Wisconsin. I'm going to hit you up.
Please do. I think you are. Have I not seen your dates?
Yeah, I will be in Iowa.
No, you are.
And Kansas.
No, I saw you're in Davenport or you're in Dubuque.
No, I'm not.
I saw neither one.
No, well, maybe I am. I don't know.
No, you are. You're in
you know what, let's start a whisper campaign.
Yeah, maybe they'll book me. Yeah.
guys, a pleasure. I apologize to the great gaming people that do Baccarat. And
no, you just stepped up their game.
They don't do anything.
But only where the game begins. Stuff. Yeah.
Also, I think you need to apologize to everyone in my life from this moment on, because I'm never going to refer to it as anything other than Baccarat.
Of course, it's Baccarat. I'm crying out loud, Danny Zucker.
Come on. I've absorbed that as a piece of obnoxious speak.
Were you raised in a barn? Please, Baccarat. Yeah.
Baccarat.
Walk in and say.
Grow up.
You say, good captain, where is your Baccarat?
Yeah. I'm normally saying, good captain, where's your Baccarat?
Good captain, point me to Baccarat. All right. Okay. I love you guys. This was really fun.
All right. Thank you, Doing It Nation.
Thank you, Doing It Nation. Bye.
Ooh.